In the 10th century Islamic era, Shah Tahmasp Safavi used bricks to build the first sepulcher on the mosque. Sometime later, an additional sepulcher made of transparent white steel was installed around the original sepulcher, and a wooden door was fitted in the northern frontage. In the 13th century Islamic era, Fath Ali Shah Qajar replaced this door with a luxurious golden door. He also upgraded the sepulcher by having it coated with layers of silver and installed on a malachite pillar. With time, the sepulcher lost its radiance, so in the 14th century in Islamic era, it was again renovated. Finally, in 1973, the form of the sepulchers was altered and its height increased. Fath Ali Shah Qajar had the shrine flagstoned with marble. He believed the spiritual gusts around Hazrat Masume's shrine has to step on the best of stones. Atiq Courtyard. In the 10th century in the Islamic era, Shah Begum Khatun, the daughter of Shah Ismail Safavi, built a square-form courtyard with three verandas. Later, Fath Ali Shah had it remodeled into an irregular octagonal shape. This octagonal form is said to have been built on the memorial of Imam Reza Thaman al-Hujjaj, the brother of this holy woman, pointing to the fact that Imam Reza was the 8th Shia Imam. Gradually, the number of verandas in the courtyard increased. At the moment, it has 7 of them, 4 on the south side and 3 on the north. The verandas of the Atiq courtyard are the most famous within this court. They were built on the order of Shah Begum and gilded during the reign of Fath Ali Shah Qajar. They constitute the entrance of the heavenly courtyard. Atop each veranda, a hadith inscription in white thulf is displayed on an azure background. Above it, a myriad of tiles and inscriptions. Mm-hmm. Imam Khomeini Great Sanctuary. It is one of the greatest architectural feats after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, featuring a multitude of porches, entrances, and other facilities. Called Balasar, overhead mosque, it is situated nearby and overhead to Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. That's where it draws its name. In the Safavid period, it served as a motel. Inside the shrine and next to the holy tomb of Hazrat Masumeh, a mausoleum houses the eternal resting places of grand ayatollahs, scholars, and outstanding scientific and religious figures, the largest grouping of revered Muslims anywhere, particularly in the Shia world. Qum is called Darul Aman. Some of the renowned and compassionate scholars buried in the mausoleum here are Allamez Tabatabai, Khansari, Golpayegani, and Bahjat. Martyr of love and writing and eminent ideologist Murtaza Mutahhari is also buried here. In the INM mirror courtyard of the Holy Shrine lies the mausoleum of freedom crusader Sheikh Fazlullah Nuri, born in 1843 and killed in 1909. Sheikh Nuri's memorial is symbolic among the liberal crusaders of constitutionalism. The tomb of martyr Ayatollah Dr. Mufatteh. He was born in 1889 and martyred in 1939. The Faizia Theological School was founded in the Middle Ages of Islamic history and is located in Qom next to Hazrat Masumeh Shrine in Astan-e-Muqaddase, Holy Threshold Square. It was registered as a national heritage in 2007. Astana School was replaced by Faizia School in the first half of the 13th Islamic century. According to valid historical documents, the school was established in the middle of the 6th Islamic century and was renovated in the Safavid era. The two-story building features four verandas. The 40 chambers on the first floor were built in the Qajar period, and the other 40 on the second floor were built in the 14th Islamic century. The oldest part of the seminary is where the southern veranda is and is decorated with beautiful tiles belonging to the Safavid era of 1939 AH. It is regarded as the gateway to the Atir courtyard and has Red Masum as shrine. The Darul Shifa Theological School is attached to Fasiya Seminary. It was founded in the beginning of the Qajar period. Originally, it was called Fath Ali Shah School. Kamran Mirza Qajar had its entrance renovated and its chambers refurbished. Since then, it has been called Darul Shifa. The building lay in ruins, but was renovated after the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The seminary now has 200 chambers and a modern conference hall. The house of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini is located in Shafaiye district of Qom. It's about 100 years old. Imam Khomeini purchased it in 1956. He lived here till 1963. Eventually, in 1994, it was donated to the house of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by his now deceased son, Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini. It was registered as a national heritage in 1996 by the Iranian Cultural Heritage Organization.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question which is related to the month that we are currently in. I'm speaking, of course, the month of Ramadan. As you know, the month of Ramadan is a very significant month. It's a very important month. In fact, in some hadiths, it's been related that if the servant was to fathom the worth of Ramadan, he would wish that Ramadan lasted the whole year. This shows us how important and significant it is. But the question we want to ask is, what exactly is the significance of the month of Ramadan? Why is it important? And in order to respond to and answer this question, we can take inspiration from the hadiths which have been passed down to us from the infallibles. By way of example, in one beautiful hadith, it's been narrated that the Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he who experiences the month of Ramadan and remains unforgiven has indeed been distanced by Allah. Oh, so that, I guess, implies that the chances of being forgiven in the month of Ramadan are more than in other months. You're more likely to be forgiven by God for your sins in the month of Ramadan than you are in other months. In a similar tradition, it's been narrated that the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam said, if a person remains unforgiven in the month of Ramadan, then what other month is there left for him to be forgiven in? Meaning, if a person doesn't sin, he cannot be forgiven in this month, there's less chance that he will be forgiven in other months. And another significant aspect of the month of Ramadan is that, as you know, in this month we have been advised to fast. This is the only month in which fasting has been made obligatory on us, obviously, for this reason. A lot of us are forced to do good, and, the chances of us are being forgiven are greater. In a beautiful hadith, it's been narrated that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said the following in his advice to his children, heralding the advent of the month of Ramadan. He said, exert yourselves in doing good deeds, for verily in this month a sustenance is apportioned, lifespans are destined, the names of Allah's select servants who wish to strive towards him are recorded down. And in this month is a night wherein the good deeds performed equal the deeds of 1,000 months. Right? So this is a nice hadith in that the Imam mentioned a lot of significant aspects of this month. He mentioned the fact that in this month our sustenance, our risk is decreed, our lifespans are destined, and, our names are selected for who will be the, good servants of God. And also, in this month, there's a night, implying Laylatul Qadr, the night of ordainment, when the good deeds we perform in that night are equal to the good deeds of 1,000 months. These are some of the significant aspects of the month of Ramadan and why it's so important. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the significance of the month of Ramadan in the light of the hadith. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight. President Trump has rescinded the security clearances of more than a dozen individuals, including former President Joe Biden and his entire family, as well as former Vice President Kamala Harris and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. President Trump on Friday night, 21st of March, rescinded the security clearances of former Vice President Kamala Harris, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, several members of the Biden administration, and other prominent Democrats. The move comes after Donald Trump had already announced last month that he was revoking former President Joe Biden's security clearance. In a memo on Friday, 21st of March, the president said he was also rescinding the security clearances of the entire Biden family. Also losing their access to classified information and their security clearances were former Secretary of State Antony Blinken, former Representative Adam Kinzinger, retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, New York Attorney General Letitia James, Manhattan Attorney General Alvin Bragg, former White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, former Representative Elizabeth Cheney, former White House Russia expert Fiona Hill, former Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, former U.S. Ambassador to the Czech Republic Norman Eisen, and Attorney Mark Zaid, who was a lawyer for the whistleblower who reported concerns about Donald Trump's dealings with Ukraine in his first White House term. Several of those named, including Letitia James and Alvin Bragg, had already had their security clearances revoked earlier this month by Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard as part of a purge of dozens of clearances for current and former officials. Friday's memo applies to receipt of classified briefings such as the President's daily brief and access to classified information held by any member of the intelligence community by virtue of the named individual's previous tenure in the Congress. Since taking office in January, the president has revoked the clearances of multiple former officials who he claims weaponized either the intelligence community or the law against him. Elizabeth Cheney and Adam Kinzinger helped lead the House Select Committee investigation into the 6th of January 2021 Capitol insurrection. Alvin Bragg brought the New York hush money criminal case, which resulted in the felony conviction for Donald Trump on 34 state counts of falsification of business records. Letitia James sued Donald Trump and the Trump Organization, accusing them of widespread fraud. The lengthy trial resulted in a judge's $453 million verdict against Mr. Trump and his former company. Those who had previously had their clearances revoked include retired General Mark Milley, who served as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Trump and Biden administrations and had a public falling out in the final months of Donald Trump's first term in office. Donald Trump was also critical of General Milley's revelation that he had engaged in two phone calls, one on 30th of October 2020 and the second on 8th of January 2021, 2 days after the Capitol insurrection, with Chinese General Li Zhiyuchang of the People's Liberation Army in order to assure him that the U.S. would not launch an attack against China and that the United States was stable. On the day of his inauguration, Donald Trump revoked the clearances of dozens of former intelligence officials who signed a letter in 2020 claiming that emails found on a laptop owned by Joe Biden's son, Hunter, bore the hallmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign. John Bolton also had his clearance pulled over a book he penned about his time in the role. The president accused John Bolton of publishing sensitive information and said the book's publication created a grave risk that classified material was publicly exposed. The American newspaper, The New York Post, has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Trump issued a memo on Friday, 21st of March, rescinding the security clearances of more than a dozen individuals, including former President Joe Biden and his entire family, as well as former Vice President Kamala Harris and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump wrote in the memo to the heads of executive departments and agencies, "I have determined that it is no longer in the national interest for the following individuals to access classified information." The list includes his three past presidential election opponents, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris, as well as Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg and New York Attorney General Letitia James. Any other member of Joseph Biden Jr.'s family will also be impacted by the memo. Former Biden administration officials Antony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, and Lisa Monaco are also on the list, as is anti-Trump Republicans Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. Alexander Windman, a key witness who led to House Democrats impeaching Trump for abuse of power and obstruction of Congress in 2019, Fiona Hill, a former Trump administration official who also served as a witness in the impeachment over Trump's phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Mark Zaid, who represented the whistleblower in the 2019 impeachment, Andrew Weissman, the lead prosecutor in former special counsel Robert Mueller's Trump investigation, and Norman Eisen, special counsel to the Democrat-led House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment, will all have their security clearances stripped as well. Donald Trump wrote, "I hereby direct every executive department and agency head to take all additional action as necessary and consistent with existing law to revoke any active security clearances held by the aforementioned individuals and to immediately rescind their access to classified information." The president also ordered executive department and agency heads to revoke unescorted access to secure United States government facilities from these individuals. Donald Trump's memo notes that he's cutting off classified briefings, such as the president's daily brief, and access to classified information held by any member of the intelligence community by virtue of the named individual's previous tenure in the Congress from the individuals on the list. In the event that any of the named individuals receives a security clearance by virtue of their employment with a private entity, the United States government entity that granted the security clearance should inform the private entity that these individuals' ability to access classified information has been revoked. Donald Trump told the New York Post last month that he planned on stripping the security clearances of several of his antagonists named in Friday's memo. On 10th of March, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard announced that she had completed a review of security clearances ordered by Donald Trump and revoked those of Antony Blinken, Jake Sullivan, Lisa Monaco, Zaid, Eisen, Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, and Weissman, along with the 51 signers of the Hunter Biden disinformation letter. The president's daily brief is no longer being provided to former President Joe Biden, she added. Donald Trump argued in a Truth Social post last month that Joe Biden set the precedent when he barred him from receiving access to the same briefings 4 years ago, citing Trump's erratic behavior. Joe Biden blocked Donald Trump from receiving intelligence briefings in February of 2021, telling CBS News that the 45th president should not be privy to U.S. secrets because of his erratic behavior unrelated to the insurrection, referring to the 6th of January Capitol riot. Biden said at the time, "I just think that there is no need for him to have that intelligence briefing. What value is giving him an intelligence briefing? What impact does he have at all, other than the fact that he might slip up and say something?" Former presidents and other former senior officials customarily retain access to classified information.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The Museum of Astan-e-Muqaddase, the Holy Threshold, is one of the oldest in the country, constructed in 1935 inside the Holy Shrine of the Martyr Mutahhari Mosque. Its curatorial activities continued until 1974. Located in Astana Square, the museum building was built a couple of years after the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Originally, it covered an area of 500 square meters, but in 1992, the building's basement was added to the museum, increasing its total usable area to 1,000 square meters. The oldest Quran in the museum dates back to 819 AD, and bears the name of Ma'mun Abbasi on the first page. Some of the Qurans are written on animal skin, some on fabric, and the rest on paper. The collection within the museum has various parts and includes handwritten Qurans from the second Islamic century to those written in the contemporary period. Coins from Islamic and pre-Islamic eras, painted tabloids and miniatures, wooden works of art including marquetry and parquetry, terracotta, bowls, glass bowls and golden inlaid tiles with designs and beautiful inscriptions belonging to the 6th and 8th Islamic centuries, stone masonry works and decorative stones, metal instruments and engravings, hand-woven silk carpets from the Safavid and Qajar eras, and hand-woven fabric. Samples of expensive marquetry are kept in the Museum of Astan-e-Muqaddase in Rome. One such sample is a rare marquetry door belonging to the Qajar period, built when Nasiruddin Shah Qajar was in power and Mirza Taghi Khan Amir Kabir was vizier, and forms part of the tomb of Muhammad Shah Qajar. Another marquetry piece from the Qajar period, with inscriptions of famous poems by Muhtasham Kashani, describing Ashura in Nastaliq calligraphy, are engraved beautifully on bones. The Chehel Akhtaran Shrine in Rome. The mausoleum of Musa Mubarqa, son of Imam Muhammad Taghi, and other offspring of the Imam. That's why the large courtyard of this collection contains three popular shrines, the Musa Mubarqa, the Chehel Akhtaran, and the Imamzade Zayd. The monument was built in 1571. Ordered by Shah Tahmasp Safavid, it was designed by Master Sultan Rumi, who was amongst the most famous architects of the Safavid era. His name is recorded in the shrine. In 1574 AD, the building's roof was renovated with brick. The ceiling is very high. A number of Sayyids and offspring of Imams are buried here. They include the sons and offspring of Imam Musa Mubarak. It is said that a total of 40 men, 40 women, and 25 children are entombed in this shrine. The Library of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi. Sayyid Shahabuddin Husseini Marashi Najafi was born in 1897 in Najaf and passed away in 1990 at the age of 93. He led a frugal existence. He is famous for salvaging thousands of rare and lost Islamic books at his own expense. His library holds the world's largest collection of Shia manuscripts. The oldest undated manuscript in this library is the pages of the Holy Quran written in Kufi, going back to the 2nd and 3rd Islamic centuries. And the oldest dated manuscript is two parts of the Quran written in Kufi by Ali ibn Hilal in Baghdad in 1013. There is also a golden page of the Holy Quran in the collection bearing Imam Reza's handwriting. Now the manuscripts of the library number 60,000, 65% of them in Arabic and the rest in Persian, Turkish, Urdu, Tartari, Hibachi, Pahlavi, and Latin. Annually, between 750 and 1,000 manuscripts are added to this library. Marashi Najafi wrote more than 148 books, dissertations, and papers in his lifetime. Most of them are yet to be published. Qom's traditional bazaar, scented with perfumes, has played host to travelers from far and wide who come here to buy souvenirs such as sohan, mohrs, prayer stones, and sajadas or prayer mats. The aroma of fresh sohan, made next to the retail shops, draws every tourist and pilgrim to itself. Rome's Grand Bazaar houses a beautiful historical monument located near the mausoleum of Hazrat Masumeh. It bears the hallmarks of the Qajar era architectural style and was registered as a National Heritage Site in 1997. The building has two floors with 12 chambers. It used to have long cloth sashes that are now mostly ruined. Above the chambers and the vaulted corners is chalk architecture. The roof of the shopping center has three openings, and the middle section opens up to a height of 15 meters. The market has an arched roof, considered the largest in Iran. The monument was designed and executed by Master Hussein Rumi in 1882. Custodianship of the monument was granted to Sayyid Mahmoud Tabotabai, a recognized businessman in Rome and the father of Sayyid Hussein Tabotabai. The mosque in the old square of Rome is 900 years old, and atop its fine architecture is the first minaret and dome built in Iran, and the third in the Islamic world. It is an octangular-shaped monument with a dome and two pyramid-shaped covers on top. It was built during the rule of the Qajar dynasty at the beginning of the 18th Islamic century. Later, a veranda and some other monuments were added to it. The shrine of Imam Ali ibn Ja'far, after Astana Muqaddase, transcends all other monuments and mausoleums of Qom province in terms of spectacular decorations. One of the most important features of this splendid shrine is its plasterwork, which is among the most outstanding artistic works of the 8th Islamic century. There are 94 pieces of gold inlaid tiles on the monument showing plant, animal, and human designs. Nasr inscriptions containing Quranic verses and religious stories and Persian literature are among other unique decorations of the shrine, while other inscriptions and decorations are common throughout Iran and in museums around the world. The gold inlaid altar of this monument, situated at the southern end of the shrine, was built in 734 AH. It is one of the greatest artistic works of its time. Today, this altar has pride of place at the Islamic Era Museum in Iran's National Museum. Jamkaran Mosque, where Shia Muslims believe that Muhammad al-Mahdi, the hidden 12th Imam, who will lead the world to an era of universal peace, once appeared and offered prayers. The mosque is located on the Qom-Kashan Road, 6 kilometers outside the city of Qom. According to Muhaddith Nuri, a contemporary religious scholar, the foundation of this mosque is credited to a man named Hassan ibn Muthle Jamkarani, who was contracted to build the mosque upon the request of the 12th Imam. On Wednesday evenings, and especially on the 15th night of Sha'ban, Imam Zaman's birthday, Shia Muslims come here to pray. Imam Hassan Askari Mosque. Also located in Qom, near Ali Khani Bridge and next to Astana Street, is the monument of the 11th Shia Imam, Hassan Askari. It used to be called the Atiq Friday Prayer Mosque. According to various accounts, it was built by the Imam's representative, Ahmad ibn Ishaq Ash'ari, in the 3rd Islamic century. Since then, this monument has been renovated several times. Today, the oldest part of the monument is its southern veranda, built in 1750. The Imam Hassan Mosque has always been held in high esteem. Since the 9th Islamic century, The custodians of Astana-e-Muqaddase have been taking care of this mosque. Rebuilt in the final years of the Safavid period, today only the southern veranda remains standing. The monument sustained extensive damage during the Qajar era flooding. At the end of Worms Chahar Mardan Street and inside a small garden called Bagh-e Gumbad-e-Sabz, the Green Dome Garden, there are three historical monuments, relics from the 8th Islamic century. It is known as the Kashan Entrance. According to available historical documents, the two domes of this site are the tombs of the rulers of the Ali Safi House, independent sovereigns of Qom. The inscription on the third dome has been destroyed, so no one knows when it was made and who made it. But going by documents from various sources, this third dome, historically speaking, dates back to the same period and probably also belongs to one of the members of the Ali Safi House. The people of Qom call this collection of mausoleums Sa'd, Sa'id, and Mas'ud, the three senior Ash'ari Arabs that revitalized Qom during their time. The plaster work at these three monuments is one of a kind. 1. The tomb tower of Khaje Asiluddin, representing the tomb of two rulers of the Safi house in 761 AH. 2. The tomb tower of Khaje Ali Sali, representing the tomb of three rulers of the Safi house in 792 AH. And 3. The northern tomb tower belonging to the late 8th and early 9th Islamic centuries. The tombs at the Green Dome Garden were registered on the National Heritage List in 1931. The tomb towers located in the garden include a southern dome, a middle dome, and a northern dome. From among the valuable remembrances of Persian architecture are the old caravanserais, built in the past eras in a different communicative, economic, military, geographical, and religious environment, and then gradually, over time, developed and expanded. Two kilometers from Mahmudabad village stands a clay castle on the edge of Qom Road. In the north of the village, there are two castles, one a famous stone castle and Islamic monument, and the other, called the clay castle, is made of mud. It is located north of Sefid Kuh, White Mountain, in the lower northern region of Qom province. According to collected documents, this castle dates back to the Ashkani era and was inhabited in successive historical periods. The castle is 45 meters long and 29.5 meters wide, with walls of various heights, but not higher than 10 meters. The castle may have served as a protective outpost monitoring travelers entering via Varamin and the fringe of Ray into the Qom district. It would have been portrayed as the landmark entrance to the city. Stone Caravanserai. This caravanserai is located on the Qom Road, 35 kilometers from Qom City. It is a four-veranda caravanserai, which lies in ruin and belongs to the Safavid period. The construction material used is mainly stone and has four semicircle-shaped towers on the western and eastern sides. Qom owes most of its global recognition to the holy shrine of Hazrat Ma'sumeh, which glitters like a diamond sitting in the middle of the city and every year attracts a large number of pilgrims. It is the smallest province of Iran, but is conveniently situated on the main interstate highway linking several major cities.
let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of the month of Allah. We're going to talk about some famous reciters of the Quran in this segment of the show. One of the famous reciters from Egypt, which a lot of people know, is Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh. This great reciter was born in 1938 in the Gharbiya Governorate of Egypt. Gharbiya Governorate is a place in the west of Egypt. Many great reciters were from this governorate, including Mustafa Ismail and also Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan. And it's interesting that all three of these reciters recited the Quran similarly, with a similar style. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh memorized the whole Quran when he was a teenager. When he was 16, he would recite the Quran in gatherings. And when he was just 24 years old, he entered the Egyptian radio. That's how qualified a reciter he was. For a long time, Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh followed the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. There's an interesting memory from Sheikh Mustafa Ismail about this. Sheikh Mustafa Ismail says that once he was listening to the radio and someone was reciting the Quran. Sheikh Mustafa Ismail said to himself, "I don't remember where I recited this recitation." And he was thinking to himself. And then he was told that this was actually Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh who was reciting the Quran, not Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. That's how precisely Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh imitated the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh visited many countries, including Middle Eastern countries and also European and North American countries. He visited many countries. In 1990, he traveled to Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. This was the first time that an Egyptian reciter was coming to Iran. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh, along with Sheikh Ahmad Basyuni, were the first two reciters who visited Iran. And he had some spectacular recitations in Iran. Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh, this great reciter, passed away several years ago. May Allah bless him and reward him. Now let's listen to Surah An-Nasr, recited by Sheikh Raghib Mustafa Ghalwesh. Let's enjoy this recitation.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillah.
فسبح بحمد ربك واستغفر إذا جاء نصر الله والفتح ورأيت الناس يدخلون في فسبح بحمد ربك واستغفر إنه كان توابا صدق الله العلي.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. When the victory of Allah has come and the conquest, and you see the people entering into the religion of Allah in multitudes, then exalt him with praise of your Lord and ask forgiveness of him. Indeed, he is ever accepting of repentance.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.